Hello, welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of B2B marketing professionals and people interested in B2B marketing. It's run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers. We provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for B2B marketers. And today we have over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Samantha Bentley, the campaign leader for customer experience at IBM, all about sales enablement. Plus, marketing manager at Upskill Digital, Donatas Grisius, will give us a test and learn approach. B2B marketer Simon Ledbetter will share a key lesson that he's taken on his marketing journey. And Gwen Lafarge, the general manager of Schoner Europe, will celebrate some great business marketing. Ready? Well then, let's cut to the chase. The COVID-19 crisis has put a greater pressure on businesses to generate demand and leads, and that in turn puts a sharp focus on the relationship between the two teams in an organisation that can make this happen, sales and marketing. I'm joined by Samantha Bentley, the campaign leader for customer experience at IBM, to talk about sales enablement. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave.
So do you agree that there's a new focus post-COVID on how sales and marketing teams work together?
Yes, definitely. But I think the whole situation has kind of highlighted the need for cross-functional teams amongst any organisation. I think that sales and marketing more naturally have come together because they are... to all intents and purposes, the face of the organisation to the client. But yes, I do think that there's a sense that they have come closer together. It's that sense of rolling your sleeves up, isn't it? In a crisis,
it is really. And actually, I guess in rolling your sleeves up, you've got to overcome some tensions between the two teams. And I'm interested kind of in exploring, first of all, what do you think are the typical challenges in the relationship between marketing teams and sales teams?
So I think for me, there are three key things. The first is, and it's quite an obvious one, you know, just getting a really good understanding of who does what. I think some of the tension that exists is because, you know, that's not part of my job, or, you know, that sales job. I think understanding roles and responsibilities and having a clear understanding of that is key. I think the second one would be around performance, and it's kind of related to the first one, particularly and increasingly, as you might expect, there's an increased focus on ROI. What are we doing to drive business? So the second thing I would cite would be performance and attribution. Who's doing what, and what impact is it having? And then the third thing I would cite is, you know, getting that single view of the customer. So marketing have always talked about the customer journey. Sales might talk about it in different terms, but they're still talking, you know, the prospecting and the, you know, all the way through to closing deals. But it's still part of the same thing, and increasingly, especially in a digital environment, and especially this year when everything went digital, that understanding of a single view of the customer has been a huge challenge. So I think those three things are the thing. They're all kind of interrelated, and they've all had a heightened focus because of what we've experienced this year. But those were the three challenges that I'd cite.
So then, how can those two teams then work together better? I guess how can they overcome those three challenges that you cite?
So I think, and I've had some experience of this over the last few months. So there's a heightened focus on sales enablement, for want of a better word. And I think that term is quite old. And I think we certainly in IBM, we've certainly been trying to think about it in sales enablement in a different way, and how we enable the sales teams to work. It's not about us teaching them, it's about us learning together. So particularly this year. So the thing that we have taken on board this year is not to think of it as sales enablement, but to think about it as a sales partnership, and how do we work together to create the ideal client journey in this very different environment that we're experiencing. And one of the things that we've done is to set up an advisory council. So essentially, you know, sales and marketing together in the UK, talking about all of the challenges that I mentioned, you know, the roles and responsibilities, who does what, who's responsible for what, how are we going to measure performance, how can we get that single view of the customer? The advisory council is our kind of hub, and hopefully will be our, because it's still in early days, hopefully will be our amplifier for you know, the conduit for communication between sales and marketing. It's that ongoing communication and building the relationship between sales and marketing that will really make a difference, I think.
So are there any examples, you mentioned IBM, but are there any other examples beyond IBM of B2B businesses that you think do this well?
So my experience of other organisations, I've been working for IBM for almost 20 years. So, you know, I don't have any really current up-to-date examples, certainly not from a practical experience. But I think any organisation who does exactly what I've just explained, that puts marketing and sales on a common footing, on an equal footing, and allows and establishes a forum for conversation, and there's none of that kind of they do that, we do this kind of, you know, the customer has to be at the heart of whatever we do. And if that is the guiding principle of an organization, then sales and marketing have to work together. There is no other way around it. You know you can't be two different parts of the organization focusing in different ways on the customer.
So they have to work together, but how can marketing help the sales team most?
So the way I approach this is again, but I'll start the answer to that question again, because I completely forgot, but I wasn't meant to be having a conversation with you about my experience. You know, yeah. So ask the question again and I'll answer it.
So how can marketing help the sales team most?
So the way that I approach it is around asking lots of questions. You know, what is it that you're trying to achieve? What is it that the business is trying to achieve? It's understanding the commercial objective of what the business is trying to achieve. It's sometimes also about holding up a mirror and posing a different point of view to sales. They are absolutely always in contact with the client, and they do have a lot of information about the client, but in my experience it's generally anecdotal. So marketing and the marketing information that we can bring together from the data that we have around events or around digital or, you know, client interaction helps to corroborate or perhaps contradict some of the things that the sellers are looking at. And that in itself, while it sounds very confrontational, in itself it actually provokes a debate, builds a relationship, positions marketing as a kind of thought leader within the business to understand a little bit more about the marketplace and what's happening in the marketplace in the client context. And I think that's really helpful. I think you cannot get away from the talking and the continually, particularly this year, I think, because things have been moving so fast, having that ongoing interaction, ongoing dialogue is something that we need to just continue and keep going with, and that's the sort of purpose of the advisory council that I was talking to you about. But no matter, you know, even without the advisory council, IBM is a very big organization. We have marketers that look after different parts of the business, and we wouldn't be doing our job properly if we weren't having that continual dialogue with the relevant parts of our business. So even if whether you're doing it at a macro level or a micro level, you still need to keep that conversation going.
And is there a role for technology in all of this?
So there are a few things. Of course, technology has a role to play in the sales and marketing relationship, and we've seen a lot of that in 2020. I would cite a couple of things. Having a single view of the customer and where they are in the journey is a key one, especially in this digital environment where everybody is consuming and using our material from a sales or a marketing perspective. So getting that single view of the customer is really important. I think there's some work that we're doing that is slightly more forward thinking, that is looking at what content we have and putting it in the hands of the right seller at the right time to be able to progress an opportunity. And technology can help us do that, sort of predicting what client might want, what information at the right stage in their customer journey, which is a really interesting and fascinating way to use technology for sales and marketing. And then there's the sentiment analysis and understanding, particularly this year when things have been moving so quickly, understanding what our clients are thinking at a particular time and how we can maybe allay fears or help them in their journey. And then I think understanding from a data perspective what's worked and what hasn't in our campaigns and testing things out, particularly in this environment when things are so uncertain, when we're taking a step into the unknown on occasion, being able to use technology and the data resulting from that time, or allowing the technology to help us sift through the data of that testing, is really important and helps us have that credible conversation with sales.
Samantha Bentley, Campaign Leader for Customer Experience at IBM, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
There are as many definitions of growth marketing as there are businesses seeking to achieve robust and sustainable growth. A/B testing, value additive blog posts, data-driven email marketing campaigns, SEO optimization, growth hacking, and so on. All are part of the definition, or not, depending upon who you speak to about growth marketing. So, what is growth marketing? What is your customer buying experience? How can you influence it? And what's the practical experience of those people who have achieved success in applying those techniques? I'm joined now by Donatus Grisius, the marketing manager at Upskill Digital, to look at his practical approach to growth marketing. Donatus, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Dave, for having me.
It's good to have you here. So what are Upskill Digital's growth objectives then?
Sure. So Upskill Digital is a digital skills training and digital transformation agency. Normally, we will provide face-to-face training to our customers like Google, Lloyd's, BT, and their audiences. During COVID, when a pandemic hit, we had to pivot. We have to change our entire offering. And from being specialized in face-to-face training, we have to develop a new offering for a virtual training product. This gave us a great opportunity to stop and think how we can build stronger relationships with our customers, but try to support them and their audience by providing free virtual trainings and useful content. This change, when this change occurs, we really looked at how we can all in the entire organization look very closely at what we do and how we can improve that, right? And growth marketing really helped in going forward.
That's so interesting. So sorry to interrupt you, but how did you then go about meeting those objectives?
Sure. So we started by thinking, what's the framework or what's the platform we need in our organization to set objectives and meet these objectives, right? So our primary objective is to continue growing in virtual instructor-led training and digital transformation programs globally. This is a very ambitious objective. We did three things. First, we created account-based marketing team. That this team, we pulled people from different departments. So we have people from marketing, from sales, and from customer growth department. Mm-hmm. Now, by having this cross-functional team, marketing department is no longer two or three people. Now suddenly we have 10. That gives us enough resources and a great alignment on different initiatives. We can go and reach to our audience, have a consistent communication with them, and continue delivering good service to them. Second thing we did is we implemented OKRs. These are objectives and key results. That was our sort of critical point, because based on these OKRs that we set for each target market, we can then think of what are initiatives, innovative initiatives or ideas we can test, we can experiment with to achieve our key results. Because you can achieve the same key results by doing different things, right? Third one is we needed to go very fast and launch new products, new offerings to test these ideas and see what works, what doesn't work. So we run design thinking sprints. It takes about 3 to 5 days from idea to MVP, minimum viable product, launch into the market, test it very quickly, test in the market as could be on the social media advertising, yeah, or test in the boardroom, see if the our boss buys this or not. So that really helps us to speed up the process, right?
So here's the billion-dollar question then. Three objectives. What were the results of each?
So the results, we started this process last year, and we have a data gather for the entire year. We tested things like, do we put a pricing on the website? Do we put the brochures on the website? How our content should look like? So after gathering all these sort of learnings, we optimized the entire customer journey. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, yesterday we launched our new website. That the new website is a sum of like the summary of all the learnings we have got from 1 year of testing, right? So what we've been looking at is to optimize the journey from when someone looks for a training to actually someone delivering the training to the organization, to really align that journey from, not only being marketing driven, but actually involve sales, involve our customers' growth team as well. The results were exponential. We got position our product as a B2B training product in the market from 7 courses. Now we have 33 courses. But most importantly is that we continue building our relationship, better relationship with our customers.
So that sounds like then with the launch of your website, it's a kind of piece of work that has, you kind of finished the first phase thereof of it. So where does test and learn go now for you? What's your current focus?
Sure. So with the success we got by testing many of the aspects on the website, and what we learned is that testing should not be limited to the website. I give an example. We write articles and we publish one article a week, and the articles normally, they're about 1,400, 1,500 words. What we looked at is, and we did experimentation, is can we reduce these articles to 700 words? Right? Because if we reduce to 700, we could publish more of them, really focus on the research part of it and understanding the customer persona when we do these articles. But does that affect our conversion rate? And what we've seen, that 700 word article actually performed better than 1,500 article, right? experiments like that does not have to be on the website, can be on content marketing, on social media. Going forward, we are building this culture of experimentation across the entire organization. So we want our sales team to experiment with their sales calls, with their sales pitches, sales messages. Does it work better to call someone at morning or afternoon, right? So being experimenting and being very data-driven to look at what actually works best and what doesn't.
Very, very cool. Then you've got to give us some advice. What advice would you have for business marketers who are seeking growth for their firms right now?
I would say first is the mindset change, right? For many years, marketeers have been very busy looking at what other people are doing, what content people are writing, and sort of trying to copy things. And it's hard to change, right? Because everyone is doing and it looks pretty good and you should be doing as well. So I will challenge that. I will go very deep into focus instead of your products or your offering, really focus on your customer, right? How best I can talk to them, where best I can find them, how my website should look like for them to be appealing, right? So really focus on them. So that's a big piece of advice. Another one will be is start with a small test, something that you can manage pretty well, but do them constantly. We run 3 to 5 experiments on a monthly basis. We don't want to go to 10 tests or 10 experiments because it would be hard to manage the data of it. So start small, but be consistent.
Great advice. Donatas Grisius, Marketing Manager at Upskill Digital. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Next up, Simon Ledbetter shares a key lesson that he's taken on his career journey to being CMO of Keller Williams. Simon, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. And what's made you the brilliant B2B marketer that you are today then?
That is very kind of you. Actually, I've just started a new job and they put a press release out of it. And yesterday I was described as a heavyweight.
Yeah, I saw that.
And today I've
and
become
you're brilliant
a guru.
Today. Yes.
Which is really fantastic because as my mother-in-law pointed out, it looks like I've lost weight, which I rather liked. Why have I been successful if I accept the assertion that I have been successful, which I like to think that I have, is I think it's lifelong listening and learning. I've never seen myself as the finished article, or I know everything there is to know. I have the humility to admit that there's so much more that I can learn. There's so many brilliant people out there. So I've always made sure I surround myself with people who are more successful than me at things that I know I'm not necessarily great at, or I do well, but I know they do better. And it's that you'll always find me with my head in a book or on a podcast or listening to a TED talk, because I know I could waste days on Wikipedia just going from thread to thread trying to learn about more stuff. And I think it's strange to me how many people reach a certain point in their career and think they're finished. They know everything. And I describe it actually as the two types of people, the curious and the fundamentalists. The fundamentalists think they are right, but are almost always wrong. A curious person can never be wrong. They just ask the right questions. I'm a huge fan of the environmentalist Stuart Brand, who did the whole Earth catalogue. Right. He talks about strong opinions, lightly held, which I think is a nice way. Be confident enough of what you think at the time, but be really willing to change your mind when the facts change, I think as Maynard Keynes said. Humility and listening and learning are kind of the watchwords that I would have.
And are those skills that you can learn, or are they kind of just innate in your character, and if you don't have them, well, bad luck?
I think obviously some of it's innate. Some people are more curious and creative than others. Some people are more, they accept the world as it is rather than want the world to change based on their views, the unreasonable person. But I think you can learn to be curious. You know, actually we do teach it out of children at schools, which I think is a really big problem. You know, in the knowledge economy, we want the most curious, most creative children to come into the workforce. You know, most of the jobs that exist when they graduate don't exist now. That's the way the world's changed. But absolutely, I think if you have suddenly realized you're not really learning. Or, you know, I had a moment when I stopped listening to TED Talks and I said to my wife, oh, I've just bought a TED. And she went, that's a worrying sign, Simon. Because it just meant that at the time I was too busy to learn. And if you're too busy to learn, you're going to go backwards because the world is constantly changing. So I think if it doesn't come naturally, and I think I'm naturally curious always and inquisitive, if it doesn't come naturally, push yourself to be it. Because even if it's a bit of a battle to get over that first hurdle, you learn something. It's amazing. It changes your perspective on things. And if it doesn't, or it confirms what you already know, that's also great too.
So it's almost about kind of making sure in your day there is some learning time.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I'm always fascinated by people who, especially the digital native generation that's in our workforce now, and we always criticize the young and it's not fair. But they'll ask me a question, what does this mean? And my instant response was, have you Googled it? You know, you're the generation that is connected to all the world's knowledge and have been since you left school or while you were at school. When I started work and my boss wanted something, I had to walk around the corner to the Holman Library, photocopy a page from a book, and then bring it back to the office. Now it's all a click away. So I think, you know, always be curious. You know, if you hear something you don't understand, go and look at it. I know it's funny how many people quote things without checking if that quote is authentic. You know, go and look at WikiQuote, go and look at Quote Investigator. You know, then you'll find out if that quote is true and also what the context of that quote was. And therefore you learn more about it at a most basic level. But all the world's knowledge is out there. So there's no reason why you need to buy books, or I recommend that you do. There's no reason why you need to watch long videos, although I recommend that you do. If you want to know something, Google it. And it's all there at your fingertips. And it is surprising how many people are just not curious, because the world's such an amazing place.
And again, you've mentioned some resources. So you talked about TED and Google there. But are there a couple of real go-to places you would recommend people look at?
The BMC.
Well,
obviously.
Obviously.
In this world, definitely B2B marketing. I think it's brilliant. As a resource, I love Harvard Business Review. There's some really insightful stuff. You know, I'm not a huge fan of the big accountancy consultancy firms, but you can't knock what McKinsey and EY. Definitely the industry bodies, so the trade professions. There's often lots of research in those areas to go to. So depending on what sector you're in, really get into the trade body that's behind it, because they'll have done lots of great research that's free to you as a member. And I know there's so many who aren't a fan of it, but I think a great start down the path is have a look at Wikipedia on the subject. And if you scroll to the bottom, forget the article, however accurate that is, although it's often more accurate than Encyclopedia Britannica. If you go down, there's a whole list of amazing resources and sources that have been found. So you can go back to the source text. Another thing that I do, and I've loved the fact they've just updated it, is Google Ngrams, which is all the books in the world. And you just type a subject and it'll tell you what books are about that subject and when that trend started. So you can go and find the original source material of the theory. You know, I'm a nerd on that front. I like finding, you know, I naturally want to find out where it all comes from. I'm endlessly curious. But yeah, I mean, I'd say the big academic institutions, the big professional institutions, the Googles, the Wikipedias, definitely TED, and absolutely 100% BMC.
Simon Ledbetter, CMO of Keller Williams, thank you very much.
A pleasure.
There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by Gwen Lafarge, the General Manager at Schoner Europe, to look at some of it. Gwen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's good to have you. So there's some great business marketing out there. What's caught your eye?
Okay, so I agree, a lot of great B2B companies are doing a really good job with their marketing right now. I will say I can give you five examples and some of the reasons why I think they're great. So I will mention Snowflake, their data platform built for the cloud. Gong, their revenue intelligence platform. HubSpot, a lot of marketers probably know HubSpot. Slack and Basecamp are maybe like some of the ones that I think are doing a really good job with their marketing. And they're doing it for different reasons.
Okay, so, hello.
Okay, so I think one key thing is that they dare to be different. Like they take a really good stand and in being like a different brand. They believe in like having a bold and brave brand that is not just
different from their competitors.
Different than their competitors and different that I will say a lot of B2B brands in general. I think one thing that comes to mind, I think for people in general when they think B2B brand is like dark blue and boring, right? So I think a lot of those brands and especially those new tech companies from San Francisco, a lot of them have embraced a new way of doing branding, which is much closer to B2C brands. And I think that's a good starting point, is syncing or borrowing some of the codes from B2C marketing and understanding that your audience are people and not just like companies on the other end. So they still buy with their emotions. So having a brand that talks to them as people, as human being, is really important. I think that's a good first step to being a great B2B marketing brand. Oh, yeah.
Okay. What else?
What else? I think one thing that I really think is important is authenticity, and how some of those companies are using their people and their marketing team in a really good way as kind of ambassadors for the brand. So it's beyond like the logo, right? And the look and feel. Your brand is much bigger than that. And I think a really good example is Gong, where they have a really great voice that also come from the people in the marketing team and the CMO being very active, for example, on LinkedIn, in a very human and authentic way. He's not talking like boring B2B language, he's being himself, or maybe social media self, but still, I believe that's like a good way of making the company more than just a brand and like selling a product, is having this really good authentic experience and having people kind of carry it. So that's what he's doing and kind of building this fan club through his own personality. So that's one way. I think the other way that companies are doing a great job is really adapting their message and their voice to the different channels that they're using. So that's another way. And HubSpot, for example, I think what makes them great is definitely the content. So content will play a very big role in making like a B2B company great. So let me see, content, authenticity, daring to be kind of themselves and unique and having kind of a strong voice. And of course, like having this kind of bold brand design that people can relate to and embrace and borrowing some of the code from the B2C. I think those will be some of the ingredients I will say makes great B2B brands.
There's a lot there. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Which of those would you say is the most important to a B2B brand?
That's really interesting. Well, I guess I might not be completely objective,
but it was bit of a leading question, to be honest.
Yeah, but I will say that your appearance definitely play a big part, because when some of the first interaction that people have with your brand is when they land on your website. So when they look at your website, and if you look old school, or if your message is all over the place, if they don't understand what you're doing by reading what's on your page, if the look feels kind of, yeah, old fashioned, or and your tech companies, it reflects on your product. So I will say that having a brand that is as modern and innovative as the product that you're selling is probably very important.
Gwen Lafarge, General Manager at Scona Europe. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, to Samantha Bentley, Donatus Grisius, Simon Ledbetter and Gwen Lafarge. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers, and you can check out our other webinars, podcasts, events, mentoring, blogs, newsletters, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.